judgment. Those shame box people do crazy, funny things. So,
did you meet some? Both of you meet some good friends at the theater here.
Within the first week, everyone's like best friends, and we all have really stupid inside jokes that we come up like within the hour of meeting each other. It's
hanging out crazy. Now and going to get dinner or something.
Yeah, it's the raddest community ever.
We've had some late night chats.
Pretty close knit. Yeah. I think it's a close knit family, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, if you definitely want to get to be involved with some folks and get to know them, I think definitely theater would be a great group. So I wanted to thank you both for joining us and stopping by our studio. I was saying, did you know we were here?
Yeah, we didn't.
Down here in the...
I know. Well, this building is a labyrinth. I was walking around here like a lost puppy. Like, I have no clue where to go.
Well, you found you and brought you in.
I was... Seriously, this place is... It's crazy walking around this building. But, yeah, it's such a rad, cool space. Like, it's awesome in here. It's so fancy looking.
Come by. It's actually professional and the real thing. So come by. Take classes here, by the way. I said that. It'd be great for you to come by and take some classes and do some interviews yourself.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. So thank you both, Rachel, Griffin. I really appreciate it. We're going to let everybody know right now where to get some tickets here. So for more information on how to see Hamlet at Saddleback McKinney's Theater, it begins October 28th through November 6th. You can go to saddleback.edu to the theater arts page, or you can go to eventbrite.com and search for Saddleback College Hamlet. Be sure to also check out some ticket information for the Charlie Brown Christmas. That's also coming up starting December 2nd through the 11th. So thank you both again for being here. We appreciate you taking the time to join us. And you've been listening to OC in Focus. I'm your host, Karen Bauer, along with our co-host, Alina Hernandez. Be sure to check out more of OC in Focus episodes at ksbr.org. Thank you for tuning in, everyone.
The Local Music Spotlight is heard almost hourly on the station, playing local artists from SoCal, and is sponsored by the Getzman Group, a local company who provide interim finance and accounting professionals to a broad range of SoCal clients. And they're currently hiring career-minded people with 5 to 10 years of finance or accounting experience. More information can be found at GetzmanGroup.com. GetzmanGroup.com.
Public Radio is powered by connection. The music, the voices, the community, it's all here because you choose to support it. Keep the connection alive today with a gift at thesocalsound.org.
Hey, this is Justin Vernon representing Bon Iver.
Hey, this is Blonde Shell.
This is Alex Kapranos from Franz Ferdinand.
Hi, this is Japanese Breakfast.
Hello, this is Lucy Dacus. Support Public Radio in Southern California by making a donation at thesocalsound.org.
You are now watching On Point, a news and public affairs show from California State University Northridge.
Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Matthew Bergula, and in this episode, we discuss food insecurity and the effects it can have. The U.S. Department of Agriculture defines food insecurity as the uncertain availability of nutritionally adequate and safe foods, or uncertain ability to acquire acceptable foods in socially acceptable ways. Prior to the pandemic, 30% of all college students experienced food insecurity at some point in their college careers. In the fall of 2020, a HOPE survey found that 38% of students in two-year colleges and 29% of students at four-year colleges reported experiencing food insecurity in the previous 30 days. A study also found that students of color were more likely to suffer from basic needs and insecurity. 75% of indigenous, 70% of black, and 70% of American Indian or Alaska Native students experience food insecurity, housing insecurity, or homelessness. So how does food insecurity affect students? Well, a joint study by Chegg, national nonprofit Swipe Out Hunger, and the Born This Way Foundation said that 35% of students said their hunger had impacted their ability to study at some point. According to Swipe Out Hunger, students who deal with hunger often get lower grades than their counterparts and tend to withdraw before completing their degree or certificate. The pandemic has only made it worse. The HOPE Center found that 52% of students who faced food or housing insecurity in 2020 didn't apply for any support programs because they didn't know how, and one-third of students knew someone who had dropped out of school due to difficulties affording food. I'm joined today by Mike Damansky, a CSUN broadcast journalism student who is on CalFresh, and David May, the Director of Marketing and Communications at Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. Thank you for coming in, Mike.
Hi.
And thank you for coming in, Mr. May.
Of course, yeah.
I would like to start with you, Mike. Yeah. So I want to ask, when and how did you first hear about CalFresh?
So hearing about CalFresh, first off, it was just a couple of my roommates. To say more or less, we were penny pinching here and there, buying food and affording rent and doing the necessary costs to, you know, keep up with things. And I was just scrolling on Instagram one day, and I saw a video about what CalFresh was and what it provided. Obviously, what you see on the internet and social media, you have to be a little leery about. And I was cautious at first. But one of my roommates said, I'll try it out and see what happens. And he had a whole process, told me the whole process. And then I did it myself. So, yeah.
Can you go into a bit of that process of how of signing up for CalFresh?
So you start off online. You give some basic information of how much money you make, if you're a full-time student. Those are some minor details, people in your household. And then you get a scheduled interview with a person from the Department of, I forgot what service desk, but they end up calling you, and then they ask you more in detail about the income you make and if you can afford, or allow to have CalFresh. And luckily, took some time because they said possibly you may be able to get it. They can't guarantee everybody. So once I found out, it was, I was thankful. I would say that I was really thankful for it. So,
were you worried at all that you might not be able to qualify for it?
Yeah, there were points. It's just, kind of keeps you on edge a little bit. But, once, it came through, I was really happy. So I, for a while, it's like, would I be a little disappointed? Yeah. Would I still make, it work how I was doing now? Yes. But, it would help a lot once I got it. So,
okay, how quickly did you get confirmed for CalFresh?
I just know it took about 1.5 to 2 months with the entire process of going online from the interview, gathering necessary documents and whatnot to provide to them. And obviously, they make their determination if I can be eligible for it or not. So it took about 1.5 to 2 months.
Do you know if that's the usual amount of time?
I've heard one of my roommates, it took a little longer. Some took quicker, but I couldn't say if that's the quickest way. I would say it's probably the average of how long it takes. So, yeah.
All right. So, Mr. May, I want to ask, since you are the Director of Communications for the LA Food Bank, what services does the LA Food Bank provide to people in Los Angeles?
Yeah, so the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank mobilizes resources to fight hunger throughout LA County. So we're a nonprofit organization. We acquire food through really mostly donated product through farmers and growers and wholesalers and distributors. And then we glean and prepare that food for later distribution. And the food is distributed through a partner agency network of about 600 other nonprofit organizations that we have partnership with. It might be churches or synagogues, religious organizations, could be Boys and Girls Club, YMCA, Salvation Army, things like that. And that allows us to distribute the food locally because, as you know, LA County is very large. Mm-hmm. And we have two primary facilities. We have a location in South Los Angeles. We just acquired a new facility that we're converting into a distribution center in the City of Industry that's going to allow us to provide more food throughout the community. But you can imagine those two locations might not be convenient for someone in Long Beach or Lancaster, and we don't provide food directly from those facilities anyway because they're big warehouses with semi-trucks driving around, everything like that. So that partnership with those 600 organizations allow us to distribute the food locally in local communities and to anybody that needs it.
So you mentioned donations. Is it strictly just donations of money, or can people also donate food to your food bank?
It's possible to donate time or talent or treasure. So we do accept financial contributions, and that helps us keep everything moving. Of course, we, again, have these fleet of semi-trucks and refrigeration for a lot of fresh produce that we distribute. We're food banks, I think, nationwide, and especially in Los Angeles, we're moving away from that canned high-sodium thing that people associate with food banks. And, of course, there's always going to be some shelf-stable product. It's important, but we're moving into a lot of fresh produce, frozen protein items. So that's what a lot of those donated funds helps us with, is transport, the logistics, storing, and all that. But we have about 16,000 volunteers in 2022, and that's pretty typical. We'll have, 15,000-16,000 volunteers a year, so that's another good way to get involved. And then it is possible to just donate food directly to the food bank as well, so people can organize food drives and things like that.
Yep. Most excellent. Our On Point reporter, Siobhan Pert, spoke to Jesse Waltall about the community garden on campus.
The garden at California State University Northridge stands for Growing Accessible Resources for Diversity, Education, and Nourishment. The garden is a useful resource to help maintain consistent access to food for an active and healthier lifestyle. Jesse Waltall, who works for the Institute of Sustainability and at the Food Garden, talks about the relationship between gardening and food insecurity.
There's the immediate effect, right, where we're growing food on campus. It's hyper-local, healthy, organic food that we're giving straight to the food pantry. So we're supplying that very near-term need that exists on campus of where am I going to get healthy food this week, today.
Not only does the food garden grow produce, they work hand-in-hand with the site on campus to turn organic matter into rich soil the garden can use to pot plants.
Composting is another thing that we do up at the garden, where we take that kind of back end of food after we've gotten our use out of it and turn it into resources that we can put right back into our beds and provide nutrients for the new food that's growing to then continue the cycles.
According to Forbes, since the pandemic, nearly 40% of college students attending a four-year university are facing food insecurity.
The hydroponic system just came online during the pandemic, so that's really helped us ramp up the amount of food. It was part of a grant, actually, to help kind of combat the issues that we were seeing during the pandemic, where food insecurity became more of an issue.
The food garden has seen enthusiasm in students when it comes to volunteering here at the garden. To help maintain the continuous flow of having fresh produce, it's recommended you recycle your waste properly in the trash and recycle bins around campus and help spread the word to students about resources that campus provides and reducing food insecurity. Reporting from Northridge, California, this is Siobhan Pert.
Thank you, Siobhan. Now, Mr. Domansky, I mentioned earlier that students that deal with hunger, they can possibly get lower grades. Have you run into this problem at all? Has hunger perhaps stunted your abilities to perform at school?
Having, not having a full, stomach and trying to do work, it can be challenging because you get tired. You don't have a lot of energy to do work. So, I would run into problems like that. Would I have to, make something quick or with what I had just to, make myself full as much as I could? Yes, but mainly tiredness and lack of energy was the biggest thing. Those two things are probably the key factors of what, stunted the progression of doing work and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And I know you signed up with CalFresh Online. I'm aware there are CalFresh offices. Have you ever been to any of them?
I have not. No. It was all online through the phone. If they needed me to go in, obviously I could, but it's mainly an online process of documenting and calling, and that's about it. So.
Okay. I want to ask, do you think there's a stigma to going to certain programs like CalFresh or nonprofit organizations?
Wouldn't say necessarily. I more or less encourage students if they need it to get it. Could I have made it work, without CalFresh? I still could have, but that extra benefit would have really helped and, really save money elsewhere. So more or less, having that
assistance come in really benefits me, you know, in the long run, when I don't have to continually go out for food and make sure I, you know, worry about how much I can spend on food. I can just, you know, spend what I can, and then I go from there. So yeah.
So you've have you encouraged other students to possibly utilize?
Well, yeah. If they were struggling, if I notice anyone struggling, obviously seeing if someone who was hungry or whatnot, I would, or you know, trying to save money where they could, I would suggest it to them. So yeah, I've suggested to a few people, but I've never come across anyone who's, you know, explicitly asking for it. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. May, do you think there is a stigma to using something like CalFresh or food banks?
We encourage anybody who's in need of food assistance to come and receive food from either our direct distribution programs or to our partner agency networks. We do know anecdotally people maybe shy away from attending food distributions, but we'd hope that there wouldn't be a stigma. Again, if somebody's in need of food assistance, we want people to know that the food is available for them. That's what it's for. A lot of times with the donated product that we receive, we're getting it in time, and it's still great, healthy, nutritious food that if too much time goes by, maybe it's going to have to go to a landfill. And there's negative consequences, especially when there's organic compounds breaking down in landfills, releasing methane gas into the air as a negative impact to the environment. So we'd much rather get this excess food or this rescued food into the hands of people who need it before it has to go to the landfill, while it can still be used productively.
Do you run into that problem a lot with excess food? Just too much food that no one, too much and not enough people needing it or getting it?
If the food makes it to us, we're going to use it really effectively. And so our primary goal is to get it out to our partners or out through our direct distribution programs so that it can go to people in need. And then as we're gleaning product, if there is some food that comes to us in a state where it's not quite edible, we do have a process where organic materials goes, we have a relationship with waste management, so we can turn that into basically a slurry that can be converted into a biodiesel fuel. So even if we can't get it into the hands of people who need it, if it's already past its time, we do have other ways we can turn it into animal feed. And of course, there's always going to be a percentage that unfortunately does have to go to the landfill. But where that rescued food comes in is, again, if we're rescuing it and it's coming to us, we're going to find a good home for it. The loss is, and the waste is, when food bypasses us and goes directly from maybe a producer or for somebody directly to a landfill. So we want to rescue as much food as we can and redeploy it into the community.
Okay, so I want to ask, food insecurity is now higher than pre-pandemic levels. How has this affected the bank, the food bank?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Prior to the pandemic, the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank was reaching about 300,000 people every month on average. And at the top of the pandemic, at the height of the pandemic, it was really, there's a couple months there, it was over a million. It was about, so if you think of the population of LA County, it's about 10 million people, a little more. It's almost as if a tenth of LA County's population was receiving food through the food bank or through our partner agencies. Now, as the unemployment numbers have come back down almost to pre-pandemic levels, a lot of people would expect, oh, this, you know, this rates of food insecurity and the people who are needing the resources of the food bank would go back down to pre-pandemic levels. But it really hasn't. It's only come down a little bit. So we're still, in fact, all throughout 2022, we're reaching still an average of about 800,000 people every month. So again, pre-pandemic, 300,000. At the top of the pandemic, over a million. And then now still about 800,000. And we know that even though people have, many people have, you know, the unemployment rate has gone back down, people are working and busy, the rate of inflation has made everything so expensive that even with one or sometimes two jobs, people still need that help making ends meet.
So is this a problem that's local to LA, or is it just everywhere in America?
This is going to be true anywhere that the coronavirus, you know, the COVID-19 hit, which was everywhere, and anywhere inflation is hitting, which is kind of everywhere too. So it is a big problem, but we do have some issues in Los Angeles County that exacerbate the situation a little more. We have a high cost of living here, so there's already a lot of expenses. People are spending a bigger percentage on their budget on other basic needs. So by the time food comes into the budget, what's the easiest thing to skip, right? If you're a little behind on the month, you know, you got to pay your rent, you got to pay your utilities. People are tempted to skip those meals. And that's one of the things that we talk about too, is I remember back in college too, we always used to say like, oh, well, I can get ramen, I can get this, I can find ways to make it work. But one of the things that we talk about is there's food insecurity, there's also nutrition insecurity. And so as I was talking about before, where we're really getting into more fresh produce, frozen protein items, healthy items, we want to make sure that we're not replacing a food insecurity problem with a nutrition insecurity problem. We want to make sure that we're not replacing hunger with diabetes. You know what I mean? We want people to have that healthy food. So I think that's good that you've accessed that program. There's a, in LA County, I think it's gotten a little better, but there's a lot of people who don't realize that they qualify for CalFresh, nationally known as SNAP, and it's more people that qualify than by quite a bit that are accepting the benefits. So we'd want to reduce that variation, right? We'd want really anybody who is qualifying for the program to be able to access those if it's helping their, not only their food insecurity, but their nutrition insecurity as well. So,
thank you. I spoke earlier in the week to a supervisor of the CSUN pantry, Crystal Bowen, about the services that the pantry offers.
The number of people facing food insecurity in America has doubled since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Little access to healthy produce can weigh heavily on students and has been linked to low academic performance as well as stress and depression. CSUN Pantry Supervisor Crystal Bowen says there are on-campus options to help alleviate this problem.
As a program, the CSUN Food Pantry provides supplemental nutritional items to CSUN students, staff, and faculty free of charge. All of these persons can stop by once a week and get a bag of shelf-stable goods, so canned goods, box goods, that sort of thing. In addition to that, they can also request any toiletries that we have available.
The CSUN Pantry is also partnered with CalFresh and allows students and community members to sign up for the program through them.
As the CalFresh Outreach Office, what we do is we assist in providing pre-screens and application assistance to the community at large.
The pantry provides the CalFresh Healthy Living Program as well, which is all about nutrition education.
So we do a lot of different types of workshops, both longer sessions such as a series or single session workshops.
The CSUN Pantry also gives presentations on campus. Most recently, they gave a presentation on March 2nd for National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. Reporting from CSUN, I'm Matthew Bergula for On Point.
When we return, we will continue speaking with Mr. May and Mr. Domansky about the post-pandemic effects of the food insecurity.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those barbecues you plan in detail for your family? Or your daughter's first costume party? It was out of this world. The same way you plan each detail for those moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make.
STEM is everywhere, like here, behind the scenes of The Walking Dead. STEM can create new worlds on and off the screen. The only limit is your imagination. Get inspired at shecanstem.com.
Welcome back to On Point. Now, Mike, I gotta ask, were you aware that the CSUN Pantry actually also functions as a CalFresh office?
To be quite honest, I was not. Like I said, I got this information through social media. I mean, that, you know, runs our kind of our lives today when you're online and you see stuff, and they make it, these videos pop and make it see, oh, it's easy, which I'll say it's easy, but it does take time. You have to be patient with this process. And you know, depending if you qualify or don't, you have to trust that, you know, if the system works out for you, you know, good. And if it doesn't, it, you know, it kind of is what it is. But luckily for, you know, my household, myself, we were able to all, you know, qualify for it. So thankfully it all worked out.
Do you see yourself utilizing the pantry since it is a Cal?
Well, now that I know, yes, I think I'm okay with what I can obviously do now. But, you know, since that assistance is there, it's being made known that I wouldn't mind utilizing it, of course, if need be. So,
when you refer people, will you possibly point them to the direction of the pantry?
I mean, now, of course, saying that, yes. Depending on their time and whatnot, I would say, well, if it's easier for you, you can look at this website here. But now that we have the food, now that I know about the food pantry, I would point them at them in that direction. So,
now, Mr. May, with, let's see, 4 million Californians are about to lose extra food assistance benefits when the CalFresh emergency allotments expire because we're now in a post-pandemic America. What do you think this means for the future of CalFresh?
It's a good question, and CalFresh is one of those really important programs. We are big supporters of anything that's going to address food insecurity or nutrition insecurity in our community. And with those benefits being reduced, I think it's March 26th, we're expecting more people to be in need of our services as a nonprofit partner fighting hunger. So as that, I think the individual might lose about $90. I think they're estimating a family, an average family, might lose about $250 a month. And originally, even before CalFresh benefits, wouldn't really get people all the way through the month anyway. So there's going to be a population that needs a little more assistance on top of CalFresh benefits. So that's one of the ways that the food bank can help address hunger. Hopefully the CalFresh program continues to be tweaked and improved, because it's going to take more than our activity. Again, it's going to take policy. It's going to take big action to really solve the hunger problem.
Mm-hmm. Our on-point reporter, Siobhan Pertz, spoke to Jemiah Hargens, the founder of Crop Swap LA, about converting front lawns into microfarms.
Jemiah Hargens, who the locals call a garden engineer, is the founder of Crop Swap LA. His mission is to grow food on unused spaces in his neighborhood. He creates hyperlocal resources for organically grown produce. Hargens' first microfarm here in Lemur Park, called Asante, is the first front lawn water recycling microfarm.
It's kind of juxtaposed between kind of traditionally wealthier Black community and traditionally lower income Black community, and yet all of them have the same problem, and that is food scarcity.
This South LA neighborhood is filled with more liquor stores and fast food restaurants than fresh produce stores.
And in fact, it's been planned against communities like this such that they can dry them out and kind of pull out the value in the real estate. I believe there's a larger plan.
Crop Swap LA is an affordable subscription-based program. Staff members deliver fresh produce to residents within a 2-mile radius once a week. Members of the community can thank homeowners like Michael Creer for swapping out his front lawn for the first microfarm.
It was easy. It was like, well, you know, trading my lawn in for some viable crops that I can actually eat and actually help my community. Who wouldn't want to do that, right?
Crop Swap LA currently has 2 standing microfarms here in South LA. Members of the community can appreciate Hargens as they have learned how essential it is to have fresh produce in their communities. Reporting from Los Angeles, this is Siobhan Pert.
Thank you, Siobhan. I want to ask you, Mr. Domansky, judging by how you found CalFresh on Instagram,
yeah,
and not even when you're on campus, when there's a source on campus, what does this say about how well it's been advertised, CalFresh?
Well, I think if you were to, speaking on CalFresh, if you want to advertise it well, you know, it is probably better to, you know, to our generation, if you're going to college students, to advertise on there, because majority of our lives, you know, our days really are spending on our phone. And obviously there should be, I guess, more PSAs, those type of things. I would probably say more commercials too, if you're watching television. I found it, you know, it's almost like an off chance type of thing that I just stumbled upon it. Because to be quite honest, without it, I probably still wouldn't have known about it until, you know, someone else might have told me or whatnot. So,
how do you think we should maybe advertise this on campus?
Well, I know that sometimes during club rush weeks that they have booths, and I did see their booth there. Probably more things like that. I guess more community outreach would be a suggestion. But like I said, you know,